Om Shanti. Just now we were listening to a very inspiring and enlightening and uplifting song, which gave us the life story of a person who became the angel from a man, an ordinary man. He became an angel. How he became an angel, what he did, what were the efforts he made. This is what the song was about. And one of the words with which by now I hope you are, at least most of you are familiar, was tapasya. As you know, you very often use the word yoga. Similarly is the word tapasya used, but in perhaps a wider sense, tapasya. It has more wide connotation. Yoga also refers to a particular way of life, lifestyle, not merely the practice of meditation. When generally we translate the word yoga by using the word meditation, we are narrowing down the term. Actually, yoga is much more. It's not mere meditation. Meditation is only a small fraction of it, only a part of it. And the word tapasya heightens the effect of the word yoga and draws our particular attention to the intense, deep stage of practice of meditation, and also the lifestyle in which there is abnegation, renunciation, in which there is not any attachment to any worldly things. A tapasvi, someone who does tapasya, is known as tapasvi. Like a person who practices yoga is known as yogi. Similarly, a person who practices tapasya is known as tapasvi. Tapasvi is a person who hasn't got any more worldly desires. He is free from the material desires, desires of the world. He is not attracted by things which are gross in nature, which are short living, and would give us only worldly comfort, the creature comforts, as they call it, only for a short while. And thereafter, we come back to the same stage. As a person who drinks alcohol and gets a kick, after the effect of the kick is over, he comes back again to the depressed stage and again feels like having another sip, another cup, and another kick. So, he is free from all this kind of worldly desires and attractions. No more worldly attractions, because the experience of a yogi and a tapasvi is of intense bliss, which does not come from the material things, neither from the sense organs, nor from the sources which are worldly, mundane, short-lived, ephemeral, transitory. But he is in a constant state of bliss, whatever happens. This qualifying phrase, whatever happens, is essential. To have tapasya is not a very big thing, very difficult. But to have tapasya or the experience of bliss, and I qualify it with the words, whatever happens. Because obstacles come. This is what the song also said. Many obstacles, many typhoons, tornadoes, storms came in Brahma Baba's life. But he depended only on one. We depend upon our friends, our relatives, some resource persons, certain people who are known to us, and many other kinds of ways and means. But the peculiarity and the speciality of a tapasvi or a yogi is that he has known his, from his experience, from his philosophical reasoning, his intellectual, deep intellectual understanding, he has come to the conclusion, other things are not dependable. They may fail you at the last moment. They are not the source of that kind of strength and energy on which you can always rely. The ultimate source, the ultimate strength, your ultimate companion, helpmate, someone who helps you out of the trouble, who never, never gives you up, who is always with you, who stands by his commitment, is one Supreme Father, so loving, so kind, so compassionate, true to his words, true to his promises, and without any limitations. He is the one on whom you can depend. Sometimes someone asks us for some kind of a help. We say, don't worry, we are with you. You can depend upon me. After saying, don't worry, we are with you, we add this sentence to heighten the effect. You can depend upon me. No, no, it is wrong statement. We cannot depend upon you, because you also depend upon something else. Your physical health, your monetary resources, your intellectual balance, and so on, your emotional stage. You yourself are dependent upon so many things. And if you lose your balance, and if we are balancing on you, we also fall with you. So the only one on whom we can depend, as the word depend really means, is the one. Therefore in Hindi they say, ek bal ek bharosa. You can depend upon only one true source of strength, of help, of succor, of sustenance. Someone who comes to your rescue, who is your savior, who helps you under all circumstances. Human beings say, if and but. I would have helped you, but. If this thing had not happened, I would have helped you. So they always qualify their statements by ifs and buts. But God never says ifs and buts. If he says, I am with you, he is with us under all circumstances, in all conditions. Because such is his unwavering love, you can really depend upon him. So, this song was giving us the very inspiring, elevating, uplifting, strengthening our mind that, O human beings of the world, we tell you of a person, the life story of a person, who from an ordinary became an angel. Would you like to listen how he became an angel? So that story gives us some hints how he became an angel. And among many things, two important points which were being mentioned was, were one, that he was a tapasvi. One does tapasya after getting some understanding, some belief. The basic thing is the belief system. When you know that other things do not last, this is the everlasting thing. So the one speciality of the person, one thing which he did in his life, which changed him into an angel was tapasya, and the other is that he depended upon none but one. To depend upon none but one, that was a special qualification, a very, very special effort of the person. Storms came. The life story mentions, so many storms came and he remained unshakable. He had unmitigable faith under all circumstances because he had full faith in one, and the result was that he became an angel. Now, in order that we may also get transformed, change our sanskaras, give up our shortcomings, have divine qualities in ourselves, become a yogi of a high quality, or by whatever other words you may express our efforts, one thing is that we have to constantly do an endeavor, make an effort, and for that we require a role model. There should be someone practically living that kind of a lifestyle. And we should be able to see that that leads to success. That leads exactly to the goal, which is your dream. So a role model to follow is essential. In moral education, you may give moral teachings for hours and hours, days and days, months and years. But unless and until there is a role model, inspiring role model, whom to follow, the person does not make any sizable progress. Because we say the whole world is like that. Oh, you talk of honesty, you talk of tolerance, you talk of a way of life in which there is absolutely no hatred, no anger, no malice. Who is the person? Can you show us one among the multitude of humanity? Any person free from this? Everyone has this. So we are not an exception, we say. So we want to make excuses that if we can't become, because this is the very nature of man. Man wants to rationalize his failures also. He does not easily admit that he has failed. He says, yes, even if he admits he has failed, I would not have failed but because this man let me down. I would not have failed if this had not happened. We rationalize things, you know. Now we don't want to change. And one of the things which we use for rationalizing why we are not changing, because we are having masks and we want to show that we are persons, we want to change. It's not that we don't understand, we do understand. And one of the reasons we generally give is, all the people of the world have anger, sex lust, greed, attachment. Just read the history of humankind. Can you point out, can you lay your finger on even one single person who was absolutely free from all these? Human beings are liable to err. After all, we are the spirits in flesh, and the flesh imposes certain limitations on the soul. And because of the limitations, how can you feel that we can be having unlimited qualities? So we want to rationalize. But if you have a person who under circumstances which were provocating, which were irritating, inflaming, and which were strong enough to divert the attention of a person from the right path to the wrong path, if he remained unchanged and moved from progress to progress, then we say, yes, now we know. Here is the person we want to follow. So that is what the song was given. Now, that is just when I was listening to this song, it came to my mind how inspiring it was. But Today I would be saying something on a subject which Baba very often mentions in the Murlis, and he says that we are godly students and student life is the best, he says. Godly student life is the best. If we do not have this student life, then that means we are less than the best. Even if we are not the worst, if we have not reached that stage of deterioration, at least we are not the best. So one of the things which he tells us is godly student life is the best. Study, have knowledge, wisdom, practice meditation, try to have divine qualities in your life and so on. So this is what refreshes the soul, renovates the soul, fills it with strength. From strength to strength it builds up, and so much more transformation takes place. Now in this process of education, now many people have defined education in different ways. What is education? What is knowledge? Various educationists, Eastern and Western, have defined education in various ways. But one of the important things in the present context in which I am speaking this evening is education by its very nature is transformatory. It cannot be that you get education and you don't change. Education definitely brings some change. Maybe for your betterment, and if it is wrong type of education, wrong type of information, wrong type of knowledge, false knowledge, fake knowledge, then it distorts your personality. It spoils your character. It leads you to your moral deterioration, degeneration. But it does have an effect on your personality. Education without affecting your personality, without changing your attitude, your outlook, your lifestyle, is an impossible thing. Therefore, if we want to change the world, the lever which we want to use is education. Without education, you can't change the world. You can't change even a single human being. Education is a process or a tool of transformation of a human being. Now, in this education, there are certain tests, as always are in education. When you study, there are some tests in theory as well as in practice, in both. Now, generally, at the end of your period of study, what happens is that you are given a question paper, an examination paper, a test sheet, and you have to answer those questions. That is for your theoretical test. And in chemistry, physics, botany, zoology, other sciences, life sciences, physical sciences, you are to give examination of your practicals. Both the examinations take place, and they are necessary to assess whether you have rightly understood, the things have settled in your mind, do you understand? This is what Baba generally asks in Avyakta Murli. Children, do you understand? Yes, we say we do understand. But okay, whether you understand or not, the test will prove. Just by nodding, by shaking your neck and head from this way to this way or this way to this way, we are not satisfied what you are saying is correct or not. It's not that we immediately believe. The real test lies, the real assessment lies in the tests. Let the test come, and then we can know. And in our secular studies, when we study at schools, colleges and universities, generally the examination paper at the end has some questions, as I said, and those questions we do not know beforehand. Of course, there are some books which prepare us for our examination, and they generally tell us that such and such questions are important and we must get prepared for it if we want to come with flying colors, come out with flying colors. if we want to pass the test creditably. But in this education which Baba is giving, Baba tells the test beforehand. This is the wonder, a wonderful thing in this education. Baba tells you there is a test which will come every day, every moment. Even when you breathe your last, you will be passing, you will be having that test. So, in the final stages, before giving up this mortal coil, this body, then again your final paper will have that test. Like a good teacher who prepares his students for the final examination, giving them some hints what they should prepare for. He is such a wonderful teacher, loving father, so that we may not fail. He tells us, sweet children, beloved children, may I tell you what will be the final test, so that you may prepare well in time. And one of the tests he tells is of attachment. This test will come until the end. Attachment. So, nashto moha, nashto moha. You must have heard this Sanskrit word, phrase, nashto moha, which means all your attachments are gone or not gone. This is the question. Whether all, you are totally free from all kinds of attachments to things, to persons, to certain conditions, certain circumstances, certain ways of life, so on and so forth. Do you have even a little bit of attachment? Or you are totally free from attachment? This question will be there, even in the final assessment. In Hindi, you must have heard Baba saying very often, lagao and chukao. There are certain words which do not have, full-fledged translation, do not connote the meaning fully. So I think it is better to have those words in Hindi and to understand what they stand for. Lagao and jhukao. It is not mere attachment. Lagao and jhukao has a wider connotation, wider meaning than attachment. Attachment is something very, very gross. It may not be there, but still, lagao and jhukao may be there. Generally, we say lagao and jhukao, but actually it should be jhukao and lagao, because first of all comes the jhukao, and then becomes the lagao. What is jhukao? Jhukao means your tendency, your bent of mind, your inclination. You are inclined to certain things. Maybe rationally, maybe irrationally, maybe you understand or you don't understand, you have critically examined or you haven't. It is by habit or by whatever other reason, some kind of a tendency. We have not only the outlook and the attitudes, but we have certain tendencies. Human beings are slaves to certain tendencies, which they have built up over a period of time, life after life. This lagao and jhukao has to be totally eliminated if we want to become farishta, that is the angel. For example, Baba says that you have to be free from all attractions to the relations. In Hindi, Baba generally says, a farishta is free from rishta. Rishta means relationships. And farishta means angel. Angel has no worldly ties, no worldly attachments, no worldly bondages, no worldly dependence, no worldly attractions and pulls. Is not tied to the peg, any kind of peg, but is totally free so that it can fly. You can fly only when you are not tied to something by means of a string or a number of strings. Then only you can fly. A farishta or an angel can fly. So that means you are free from all these attractions, bondages, pulls, and so on. Now this lagao and chukao is the root of all troubles. It is the root of all problems. It is the root of all negativity. It is the root of all vices. It is the root of all sins, whatever you may call. That is why again and again he says, he wants to pinpoint this one. You should be totally free from lagav and jhukav, or I say jhukav and lagav. How is it that we develop this habit, this tendency? How does this enemy of man enter his mind, his intellect, this lagav and jhukav, when in our original stage we are free from it? How is it that it finds a chance and enters into our thoughts, into our consciousness, and then begins to lead us to more and more, greater and greater deterioration, moral degeneration? People are talking of values, but why we lost values? And how can all values come together? They don't go into the root of it. Why we lose values? You see, that would explain this. What has led to the fall of civilizations? If you read the history of civilizations, certain civilizations rose to their height and gradually they fell and they got wiped out. Another civilization came in its place and they were things only of the past. We have some remnants left and the civilizations themselves have disappeared. Where did they go? What destroyed them? What was the reason? You will find answer to so many questions by understanding this question, this basic thing. Oh, this two words, jhukav and lagav, you know, these two have destroyed the whole human nature, the human fabric, moral fabric. And therefore, they being very, 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 very dangerous, we must know them and we must try to eliminate them from our path. Else, you may try your best. Okay, do many efforts, whatever you like. You cannot make any substantial progress. They are the greatest hindrances. The psychological barriers, they are holding you to your place. They won't allow you to march even one step ahead. So, if that is the case, isn't it that we should understand them thoroughly? Jhukav and lagav. I hope you will never forget these two words from now on, jhukav and lagav, because they are very dangerous, you know. If you can remember so many words, why not these two, you know, who are the main culprits? Pardon? Yeah, I'll come to it. What is jhukav and lagav? Then I am reminded of an event. One day what happened was I switched on the radio. I generally don't have the time to switch on the radio, but I thought that somehow the idea came to my mind, let me switch on the radio, because I was expecting some important news. I do not know what time the national news are given, but I just switched it on. Maybe it is not on the national network, maybe some provincial one. At least I will have that important news. So when I switched it on, what happened? Someone was teaching, giving the news to handicapped people. You know? And what was he saying? Aapko maine bataya hai. I have told you this thing. You know. So this was the first time I listened. I said, what is this man doing on All India Radio? How he has been allowed to speak like this? God, it was my first experience, first exposure to this. Somehow I enjoyed it. I continued. Like you enjoy like that system, you know. The problem is of language, I know. It's not that you can't understand, you understand it very fastly. You have a very quick mind, but perhaps I speak very fast. I'll try to change my speed, you know, because someone has to translate, you know. If again I become fast, you have to remind me. You have to warn me rather, okay? Alright, thank you. So, what happens is, how it starts, that jhukao and lagao. The first thing is that we live in proximity, in neighborhood, or closely together with some person, or with something. This is how it starts. We come in contact with some person, or with something. Then, it is human nature, either you like it or you don't like it. Because it depends upon your tastes. You like it or you don't like it. So, there are certain persons, certain things which you like. For example, you like the ice cream, isn't it? Okay. You like so many things. So, certain things we like, other things we don't like. This is how like and dislike begin to develop. Like and dislike. At that stage, it is very mild. It is not that harmful. It is only you are giving your opinion in an innocent way. Something suits you, something does not suit you. Someone likes the yellow color, another likes the blue color. So, like and dislike is not a bad thing, you know. But this is how it starts. You like certain things, you don't like certain things. Then that likeness develops into desires. It inflames your liking for those things. It becomes stronger. It takes more strong roots, like. Then you have that wishes and desires. And they say, if wishes were horses, only fools would ride them, isn't it? So your wishes become so strong. You want to have them. Not want to have them, you wish to have them. You strongly desire to have them. You have the ambition to have them, and so on. This is how it grows stronger and stronger. You like. Like we live with the body. You like certain things because of many reasons. It's not simply because of your tastes. Maybe because out of necessity. Because you are interested in something. And that interest may not be wrong. For example, we are interested in the health of our body. In the proper growth of our body. In the proper maintenance and sustenance of our body. So that is not bad. It is something natural and something understandable. It's okay, fine with it. Because if we have to do our daily course and our actions with the help of this body. We do require them. We have pain and disease if the body does not keep fit. So it is natural that we take interest. So those interests or desires, likings, because of that contact, because of that closeness, because of that proximity, because of that neighborhood, they get stronger day by day. Then you begin to identify yourself with them. Take for example someone who is very friendly to you. You are an intimate friend. You get so much identified. If you have not eaten and that person has, you give that thing to that person, says, no, you should also eat. No, it is same. If you eat, think that I have eaten. How can I think that you have eaten? Your stomach is different from my stomach. Your body, your mouth is different from my mouth and stomach. How should I believe this wrong thing, that if I eat, so you have eaten, you know. But we begin to love so much. Have familiarity to such an extent. Identification so much, so closeness, that we are prepared to sacrifice our own identity, get lost into the identity of that person, as if there are only two bodies and one soul. You know, that it happens between two persons. But this may also happen between the body and the soul. The soul is all for the body. If the body is okay, the soul feels I am okay. Of course, the body should be fit and it should be without any disease, it should be healthy. But to wrongly believe that the body is me, I am body, to identify it to such an extent is the height of ignorance, you know. It's false knowledge. But this you know from the daily life as it happens. It happens, you know. So, this develops into desires. This liking, it becomes inclination. Again and again your mind goes to those things. I have not eaten it for a long time. How about eating it today? You see. Why not have that thing? So then you begin to remember that thing. It occupies your mind. It gradually sits on the throne of your heart. You know, you love it so much that you are infatuated with it. You cannot be without it. You know. So this is how it grows. First of all is the contact. Then the contact brings either the like or dislike. The dislike is also wrong, it changes into hatred. I am not at the moment discussing about that part of the thing, hatred. That also is very dangerous. But this one, I like. If you like one thing, naturally you don't like another thing. So, I am just pinpointing on this like, because if you like, I can understand that you some don't like certain things. And naturally there will be hatred also. So that liking changes into inclinations, desires, wishes, you know. And that multiplies. That takes strong roots. Gradually you come into the grip of it. You become a slave to it. Like a bonded laborer, you are doing everything for it. So much so that in order to possess something, to have an affair with somebody, some may even commit a murder. You see, because someone likes this person so much that if there is any obstacle in the way, in order to remove that obstacle, he may even kill that person. Because I like, and this person is the obstacle, you know. All crimes, all vices, all sins, as I told you, arise from this. Because you like, you desire, you wish, and then become your tendency. Then it becomes infatuation. Infatuation is a stage of desire when your reasoning power is lost. There may be a very feeble voice in your mind, a whisper in your mind, that this is not correct. But you don't listen. Your reasoning power is so much damaged. You know, judgment power is so much lost that you think it is wrong. You know it is wrong. But still, you are in it. You can't be without it. Some people smoke because they like it. The doctor tells them, you will have cancer. Give this up, tobacco. But he says, oh, I have to die one day. I cannot give up this. I am prepared to give up my body. So if I get cancer, even otherwise also people get cancer. He does not listen to the saner advice. He is so much lost in the proper reasoning of things that he has lost his judgment and does something which may lead him even to death, you know. By dying, this person will lose tobacco also. It is not that you will be losing your body, but you will be losing tobacco also. Doesn't matter. He thinks I am consuming tobacco. He does not know that the tobacco is consuming him, you know. It is the other way around. It is not that way People generally say he is a consumer. They don't know that this person is being consumed, not consumer. Consumer is also consumed in the process. So this is what happens. So from like, it changes into, now this was first of all, jhukao. Jhukao means inclination. A small tendency, a light, a mild tendency. You are liking for it. But then it changes into lagao, attachment, a strong attraction, a pull, a very strong desire to possess it, to be always with it, to be never without it. A person thinks it is a great deprival if this thing is lost. That is lagao. That stage of liking is called lagao. And that one, the earlier one, as I said, that milder form is jhukao. Tendency. Again and again, you want to meet that person. I like to speak to that person. He is very lovable. Speaks very nicely. Is very informative. Very good personality. So on and so forth. So, jhukao. Then jhukao change into lagao. And this results in so many things. Because it occupies your memory. It blurs your judgment. It makes you lose your reasoning. It takes you to the stage of damnation. You know you are going down and down, but you don't care. You become so much, forgetful of the results, neglecting the results, that you don't mind even your ultimate damnation. You see. So isn't it so harmful when a person loses his intellect, his judgment? If judgment is lost, everything is lost. They say if character is lost, everything is lost. I would say if judgment is lost, everything is lost. If judgment is lost, character can still come back. But if the judgment is lost, character cannot come back. You see. One should first of all have this power of judgment. And this is so dangerous. It cuts the roots of our judgment, reasoning power, argumentation, understanding of right and wrong, and closing our eyes to what is happening. I will tell you how it affects, you know. So therefore, Baba says, you must be nashto moha. You must give up this lagav and chukav, this attachment, this tendency, this strong inclination, because it is not yogi-like or a tapasvi-like to have this kind of a thing, you know. Now, what are the signs and symptoms of a person who has lagav and chukav? In order that we may peep into our own mind and see whether we have that lagav and jhukao, how much of it we have. Like you take a thermometer, put it under the tongue in your mouth, and then you see what the temperature is, whether the temperature is high or it is normal. So, what I would be saying would be something which works like a thermometer. So that you can see your own self. You need not have any doctor for that purpose. Just to give you a temperature, a doctor is not required. You can take the thermometer and use it. In order to take your heart graph, you see, or your brain graph, some doctor is required who has this technical knowledge, the medical knowledge. But in order to know your temperature, you can yourself use the thermometer. Similarly, this is a thermometer which I would just be mentioning to you, how to assess whether and how much we have this jhukao and lagao. Yes? I am not fast now? Okay? Alright, thank you. You should thank me, but I am thanking you. Okay, thank you. Yeah. Now, any person who has this jhukao and lagao, or if we have ourselves this jhukav and lagav, then the first thing, not necessarily in that serial order, but I'm just mentioning that one thing, is that we will have partiality towards some persons. Partiality. Favoring some persons. Not doing justice. We may be praising them more, even if they have lesser merit, and not praising the other person as much, because we do not have that jhukav or lagav with that person. Even if the other person is more meritorious. So one of the tendencies of the person would be to be partial. Give something, would give more to this person than to that person. Give more chances to this person than to that person. More attention to this person than to that person. Everything more, favoring this person more than this. Giving more valuable gifts to this person than to that person, you know. Remembering more, writing more letters to this person than to that person, you know. Without any reason, because the heart has a pull toward that person. The strings of my heart are in the hands of another person, you know. This is what happens. Like a monkey, I dance to the tune of the master, and we become the slaves. We talk of freedom, liberty, equality and fraternity. But where is this liberty? We have lost liberty, that freedom, because this is the first bondage. You are bonded to somebody, tied up to someone. You do not want to do anything alone without that person, you know. So the one thing which we find in a person who has this kind of jhukav or lagav or attachment or inclination, a bent of mind towards that person, is partiality. And also this favoritism. And another is, you always open your mind to that person. Whatever happens in your life, you just immediately pick up the telephone and tell that person the trauma in your life, the drama in your life, and the mama in your life. Whatever happens, the first person to know about your news is that person. You must speak to that person. Then only you feel relieved. Whether that person can help you or not is another question. But that person is definitely your confidant. You always confide into that person. The most secretive things, the most personal things, the most confidential things, the most private things, because you have no privacy so far as that person is concerned. Because you think you are one. He and me are one. So if we are one, if I know, why does he not know? He must know. So I must immediately inform what happened. So immediately we pick up the phone and we say, do you know what happened to me today? You know, and that sweet person says, so what happened? What happened? Tell me, you know. So in Hindi, Baba says, jhanmai jhungmai. We talk of all these useless things, you know, waste of time. What happens if that other person comes to know? Why you want to tell that person? Involve that person? For no reason, nothing. Just to while away time, you know. You have just formed some kind of a linkage with that person and bondage with that person, building up karmic account with that person. You don't know what is happening, you know. So, what you do is, in Hindi, Baba says, dil ka haal. What happens? You just open your heart. Open heart surgery, you know. You open your heart to that person. You just reveal everything to that person. You can conceal nothing. Then, another thing, if that person becomes demands something from you, expects something from you, Because every human being has some kind of expectations from others, some kind of demands from others. Some may be more demanding, others may be less demanding. And also commanding. Some may be more commanding, others may be less commanding. There are some people who are demanding, but there are others who are demanding as well as commanding, you know. So, if this person demands something, and that demand or expectation is not right, you know, not justified, as we should say, even then we try to please that person, appease that person, you should say. The person towards whom we are attached, we want to please that person at any cost, you know. So this appeasement or the way, the policy, the attitude, the tendency to please that person at any cost, if that person is happy, I am also happy, you know. That is my outlook. The thing is, I may be unhappy, but this person should be happy, you know. He or she is my life. If happiness dwells there, I am happy, you see. I am prepared to lose anything for that person and to bring the moon for that person, even if I cannot go to the moon. But I claim I can bring the moon for that person. So I am prepared to do anything for that person to appease, to please that person, you know, to fulfill the demands of someone with whom we have that kind of attachment, you know. Such is our judgment last. Then we have emotional dependence on that person, which is very dangerous. Emotional dependence. That person should take care of ourselves. If that person says a soothing word, we feel comfortable, we feel happy. If that person, because other persons sometimes are not nice to us, they do not behave gently with us, we feel hurt, then we are expecting some kind of a comforting word from this one. So in order to soothe our emotions, we always have kind of a dependence on this person. Like a small baby, like the baby goes to the mother weeping, "Mama, mama, this thing happened," you know. And mama says, "You come to me, come to me. I will take care of you. You see, I will protect you," and so on. So the child is dependent, that baby is dependent upon the mother, you know, as a protector, as a comforter, as a sustainer. So happens with us, that person fills that gap. We become emotionally dependent. We cannot stand on our own legs. We cannot be self-sustaining, self-reliant. On the other hand, we are in the hands of that person. Then another sign is that our memory is generally occupied with it. What is that person doing at the moment? Must have gone to the office. Let me see. Just make a call and see. How are you? I just thought of you. Have you taken your tea, your lunch? Why don't you come here? We share the lunch, and so on. So somehow or the other, those thoughts of the other person come to my mind. And a person cannot be yogi if his remembrance, his loveful remembrance, instead of being directed towards Shiv Baba, is directed towards embodied persons, mortal beings, human beings, you know. So because yoga is changing your mind, the direction of your mind, from the mundane to the super mundane, from the mortal to the immortal, from the material to the spiritual. On the other hand, you are doing the reverse. It is not yoga, it is something opposite of yoga. You are having yoga with that person rather than with God. you are standing on your head rather than on your legs. Nature made that you should stand on your legs, but you are standing on your head. How long you can stand? Okay, try. You see. So this emotional dependence, and then the remembrance of that constant remembrance, it knocks at the door of your mind. How are you? What are you doing? Why don't you come here? I just thought of you. So on, and we make so many excuses to talk to each other, to be close to each other, to be with each other, you know. Because we cannot be without that person. It has now reached such a stage that we cannot be without that person. Baba says, think that I am your Sathi. On the other hand, we have made that person as our Sathi, our companion. Instead of making Baba our companion, we are always constantly keeping the company of that person in our thought, in our minds, you know. Then ultimately, what happens is, you think that person belongs to you. And that person also thinks you belong to that person. This question of belonging depends. As if that is your property. You purchased it. You are your owner. You think that it is your birthright to have it. Baba says you should say, Mere Baba. It is Baba, my Baba, you know. And on the other hand, say, this is my friend, my that person, this person and that, you know. That kind of thing. So, that kind of change in our consciousness, in our thinking, takes place. And when you think someone belongs to you, you become jealous. If other person takes more of that person's time, attracts more attention of that person, then you feel that you have your right, that person should give more attention to you, you know, more love to you. Many quarrels in family and in relationships take place because you are expecting more response, more warm response from certain people. And you think that they are being more warm to other people than to you. And you had thought that that person belongs to you. But now you feel that that person in fact belongs to the other person, you know. So your heart is broken. We say heart broken, you know. So jealousy, rivalry, and then from that hatred toward that person who is taking more attention, you know, and the feeling of vengeance, all these things. I'm not just trying to elaborate the results of each one of them. For example, I said partiality or favor. There are so many consequences, so many vices which come from it. Because the value of justice is gone. If you have, and your honesty is also gone. When you are having familiarity with somebody, you are being more soft to someone, more hard to another one. You are not equitable, not doing justice. Where is the value of justice gone? We say there should be justice. We are discussing values without discussing as to where have those values gone, why they have been lost, you know, because of this. For example, some people love, they have more desire, more inclination, more liking for the money rather than the man. They don't think that we are all brothers and sisters. We are children of God. We are family members. They are attracted more towards the money. Therefore, they exploit. Those, how did communism come in vogue? Because Karl Marx explained that man is after money. He is selfish. He wants to hold and hold more money, greedy. And wants to exploit being unjust to others. But why? He neglects the man and is attracted towards the money. So, that kind of attraction, desire for money, that is what is leading him to exploitation, to desire, and the, so many consequences thereafter. So, if you just, whatever I am saying, if you further elaborate it, you will find, as I said earlier, all the vices, all the shortcomings, all the negativities arise from these. For example, I was saying, when you think that this person belongs to me, my friend, and he is mine, and I always expect this kind of thing from him. Because when you say, Baba therefore says, Mera Tera, mine and thine. When you say it is mine, you have expectations, some demands. If those are not fulfilled, you feel depressed, unhappy. Why? You never expected this kind of thing from this one. You helped him in time of need. You have been so nice to that person. You have been loving, caring, kind, sympathetic, so on and so forth. And today, you feel shocked that this person is behaving the other way. So where from those expectations and desires and demands arose? Because you thought that that person belongs to me. Because that developed from your desire, jhukao and lagao, you know. So that kind of thing. So, therefore Baba has been saying, merapan and terapan. You must give up this mine and thine. And then you feel pain. They say the pangs of separation. When someone whom you love so fondly gets separated from you, you are distanced from that person in terms of space, communication and so on. Then you feel that there is something wanting in your life. You have lost some treasure, something valuable, something important. So it's painful to you to be separated from your near and dear ones, they say, near and dear ones, you know. What do you mean by near and dear ones? Because you have developed some likes, desires, identifications, closeness, intimacy, deep inclination of being close. And the result is that the world is a changing drama. The two situations are never the same. All the days cannot be the same. A time has ultimately to come when we must depart. No two persons are always together, by mind, by thought, by intellect, by emotions, and physically close, and so on. Some kind of separation has to take place. If it doesn't take place in our lifetime, then at the time of death, there is separation, which you cannot, prevent from happening. That is something which is beyond your control. Death, they say, for example, in the covenant of marriage, that we will take care of each other until the death departs us both. That is how they take the oath when they marry. So death ultimately marks the departure of two persons. And therefore people cry. They weep. Why you weep? Why you cry? Oh, someone whom I loved fondly, with whom I have been all this while, on whom was my emotional dependence, whom I thought is my own, one who was very near and dear to me, and so on, you know. So there is trauma. Some people get even cancer because of this trauma. They love their wife so much. A person loves his wife so much, he cannot be without that one. The wife loves the husband so much, they cannot think of separation. They are so closely dependent upon each other, eat together, drink together, so on so forth, do everything together. You can understand, ... You know? And now they have been separated, you know. So, when they are separated, you begin to weep. Why you weep? Why you cry? This is the drama of life. Don't you understand? The life has got changes and these things must happen one day. Anyone who is born must die. An ultimate final hour comes when someone has to leave the body because he took body someday. Did you never expect, oh, I never thought it would happen today, or so quickly, so soon, you know. So that kind of emotional dependence being there, there is a shock. What do you mean by shock? Unless and until there is dependence. There is dependence, and when you are shaken, so there is the shock. That happens. So they don't want to be separated, they want to be close. And then what happens is, anyone who talks ill of that person whom we love, defames that person, tries to lay some blame on that person, accuse that person, allege something against that person, then we hate this person. Because I love this person, he is saying something against this person. So they say, the enemy of my friend is my enemy too. You know, it's not maybe that he loves me, maybe he is not my enemy, he is the enemy of that person. But since he is my friend and he is the enemy of my friend, therefore I take it as he is enemy of myself also. So then I take the revenge. I begin to hate. I think what he is doing is wrong. I cannot tolerate. No, no, you don't know. I have been with this person for such a long time. I know this person is not like what you are saying. I want to justify, to protect that person, even wrongly, by giving wrong arguments, which are not valid as a matter of fact. So what happens is, this thing happens. If you just go deeper into it, you will find that all these things come from that jhukao and lagao. And ultimately what happens is that the net result of all this jhukao and lagao, you know, the judgment is shown like a balance. Graphically, in graphics, in pictures, if you want to show judgment, they show the two pans of the balance, isn't it? Pans of the balance. And in level. Not one up and one down. But this jhukao means one pan of the balance down, the other pan up. You know? Balance is lost. Balance of judgment is lost. That is the greatest loss. There are all other kinds of losses which I mentioned. But the greatest loss is that I habitually become a person who has lost his judgment, who has become blind, so to say, so far as judgment is concerned. I can't see what is right from wrong, what is justified from not justified. You know, I can't draw the line of demarcation between the merit and demerit. That is lost. And when that is lost, Baba says, everything is lost. Because it is the judgment how we change. Baba says, judge yourself. When we are given the 1 week course, take for example, on the very first day, we being told that we are souls, not this body. Judge yourself, who you are. What is this consciousness? Then, who is the Supreme Being? Who is God, our Father, and so on? Judge yourself. But if judgment is lost, everything is lost. We can't change ourselves. We can't transform ourselves. That is what happens. You know. So, this is the result of jhukao and lagao. Then another thing which Baba has been talking about very often in Murlis is transformation, self-transformation. And I said earlier that education is a process of transformation. Education is a tool of transformation. Education brings change in our outlook, attitudes, lifestyle, behavior. It enlightens us. Since it enlightens us, therefore it changes our pattern of thinking and our judgment. It makes them better, and the result is that we are transformed, we are changed. That is why we get this education daily, so that gradually we may change. Now, Baba has been saying again and again, children, I have been telling you all these things for so long. Why don't you change? What makes you keep waiting? Why you tarry? Why you don't make any progress, move forward? What are you waiting for? You know, the time is limited. We have been given the period. And Baba says, destruction will come suddenly. I won't warn you beforehand that on such and such day, at such and such time, in such and such way, you know, destruction will start. It will come, on the other hand, when people are not expecting it. They are sleeping over it. They think, they will say, oh, they have been saying it like this. Destruction will not perhaps come. When they begin to think like this and sleep over important things of life, children, that is a sign. Then will destruction come. No. So if that is the case, why don't we change? What holds us from changing? So the other thing I will be discussing this evening with whatever little time is left is about self-change, self-transformation. Because we say that if we change the self, then only we can transform the world. The world transformation depends upon our own transformation. Now, how should we transform ourselves? What are the factors which determine the pace, the speed of our transformation? Why our progress is slow, if it is? The reasons for it. What should we keep in mind so that we can accelerate this process? This is what I will be briefly telling. Now the first thing is dispassion. Vairagya. Baba says vairagya. What do we mean by vairagya? That you don't have any worldly passions. You don't have any, English Murli is translated into English, so I don't know what word you are properly using it. Some sister would. This inclination. This taste. Why should we lose our taste? You see. Why should we have distaste? If our salivary glands, those points in our tongue which give us the taste, we lose it, then it becomes distaste, no? So, to me, generally in religious literature, they translate as dispassion. You don't have any passion for it, any attraction for it. You know, if you want to call it distaste, it is up to you. But I would say it is dispassion. It is not any attraction towards those things. Disinterestedness, you can say. Instead of saying distaste, you are not interested anymore. You see, you have lost your interest in it. Total interest you have lost in it. To me, that is vairagya. In things worldly, in things material, in things which are gross by nature, in things which are transitory, in things which pertain to our sense organs, you know, our body, which are short-lived, they are of not any longer deep interest to us. We don't have any passion. It is not that we cannot remain without it. We are not passionate about it, you know. So that I would say is dispassion, vairagya. Total disinterestedness. Very often it so happens you lose your interest in something. For another person, if they say one man's meat is another man's poison. Some person thinks that without meat, without non-vegetarian diet, so diet is no diet. It is distasteful. To them it is distasteful, So that distasteful is not vairagya, that they have vairagya for those meat and everything. No. On the other hand, if you lose your interest in these things totally, that is dispassion or disinterestedness. You are not getting any kind of a savoring kind of a experience from it. So the first thing is that we must have dispassion. We must come to the understanding of the nature of the worldly things. What they are, how long they last, whether we should have them or we should not have them. What we should have, what we should not have. For example, food. It is not that you should have distaste, food should be distasteful to you. You won't eat distasteful food. Okay, let us know. We talk in terms of food. There are certain things which are unpalatable. We do not like their taste. They are unpalatable. So, perhaps that may be distasteful to us. But the word distasteful has got in it a little bit, if not much, of a feeling of some kind of hatred, something which you utterly dislike, for example. So we want to have vairag without any hatred, but with the understanding that this is not good, we give it up. We give it up not because we hate it or we have a little bit of attitude of hating it, but still we feel it is not worth, not useful, and perhaps it is bad or harmful, and therefore we must give it up. With that understanding, we give it up. That is what I wanted to say. But since I have spent my time, the class was up to 7:30, so I would like to say Om Shanti and thank you all.